You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, medication can play a big role in recovery from heroin addiction, but there are a lot of obstacles to getting the right prescription in Wisconsin. We'll find out why and what changes might be in the works.
First, as the Trump administration continues to work toward tougher enforcement of immigration laws, there's been concern in some industries about the role of undocumented workers. A recent study from Pew Research finds that undocumented workers are most heavily represented in service and construction industries.
Undocumented workers also play a well-known role in agriculture. While farming isn't the most common job for undocumented immigrants, they make up the bigger portion of the labor pool in farming than in any other sector. According to the Pew study, unauthorized immigrants make up more than a quarter of the industry's workforce, and another 20% are legal immigrants.
Our next guest looked into the potential impact of tougher immigration enforcement on farmers and food prices in recent pieces for Modern Farmer magazine. Brian Barth is a writer at large for Modern Farmer. We have his latest article on the topic linked on the Central Time Facebook page. Brian, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Sure thing. Thank you.
Well, we gave a couple numbers there, but how dependent is our farming in the United States on these undocumented workers?
Well, I heard the numbers that you just gave, and I think those are certainly accurate, but it also depends on which aspects of farm work you're discussing. So if you're talking about field work, which is the harvest, you know, the picking, the weeding, the sowing of the seeds, that tends to be done more by itinerant workers. The estimates of undocumented workers in that category are closer to 50 to 70% of the workforce. So it's primarily done by undocumented workers.
So why are we in this situation where this major, I think people would say vital food industry is so heavily dependent on people who are in at best a legal gray area, at worst at risk of deportation?
Well, I think there's two things. I think one is the low-wage aspect and cheap food, you know, that Americans have come to expect low food prices. We have some of the lowest food prices in the world relative to our income. So that's part of it. And then I think the other part of it is cultural. You know, farm work is less desirable, arguably, than, you know, flipping burgers at the local fast food joint or, you know, running the cash register at Walmart. So those other low-paying jobs, which actually often pay even less than farm work in some instances, are more desirable for American workers.
Well, you looked, you reported on a particular family of Mexican immigrants, most of the family undocumented. Can you describe the kind of work they did and the life they lived doing farm work?
Sure. They were part of the East Coast migrant labor circuit, which in the wintertime would be based in Florida, the citrus industry, and winter vegetables that are grown at that time of year. And then they sort of move up the East Coast with, you know, the spring and summer and fall harvest, you know, all the way up to Michigan and Maine. And then they go back down to Florida for the winter. And they are primarily pickers. They're primarily picking produce.
And this is not gardening. This is actually very physically demanding work,
sure.
Right?
Yeah, I mean, they usually start at sunrise, and they go until, you know, the crop is picked and the foreman, you know, calls it a day, or, you know, until their bodies give out is how he described it to me.
And they don't have a lot of recourse. So you write that in some cases, workers in this situation, undocumented, farms can simply not pay them. They can exploit them in various ways. And there's obviously nowhere to go for them to file a grievance on that.
Right. And it's not that there aren't laws against that. It's, you know, largely a matter of enforcement. And when you lack legal status, you're very unlikely to seek legal recourse, you know, for the obvious reasons, much less even just knowing how to navigate that system, even if you did want to risk deportation. That wage theft is a really huge issue a lot of undocumented immigrants and documented immigrant farm workers complain of that.
Talking to Brian Barth, writer-at-large from Modern Farmer. He's been writing about the role of undocumented laborers in American farming. There's an issue around the country here in Wisconsin, the dairy industry included in that. Brian, one question that comes up is why don't the farmers or the farm operations in question bring in people with these H-2A visas, and why don't the workers get those visas or participate in those visa programs instead of having this illegal situation?
Right. I don't have the stats off the tip of my tongue, but a very tiny percentage of farm labor is supplied through the H-2A visa system, which is the U.S. government's current method for bringing in laborers temporarily from other countries, primarily Mexico. And so both farmers and the workers and worker advocacy groups have a lot of complaints about it. Farmers find it bureaucratically burdensome. You know, when you need a field of tomatoes harvested, you don't necessarily know 6 months in advance, you know, which week of July it's going to, you know, be ready for harvest. But it may take 6 months, you know, in order to have your application processed and actually get lined up to receive workers. So it's very cumbersome for the type of work that is entailed in farming. And it's not like if you're living in Mexico and you really want to come to the United States to work and, you know, create a better life for yourself, it's not that you can really just go and apply for an H-2A visa. It really is instigated from U.S. farm employers who basically use contractors that go into Mexico and recruit workers. Those workers generally have to pay a pretty significant fee to the contractor for that service, which typically includes transportation to the U.S. and then transportation back at the end of the visa. So it's tightly controlled, it has been compared to indentured servitude. The farm worker is bound to that one employer. They can't quit if they're not satisfied with the conditions. They could quit, but they would basically face deportation at that point unless they immediately went back to their home country. But they don't tend to just because they have few other options. You know, they would basically have a legal status at that point if they were to quit.
You wrote about some industry group studies looking at what would happen if deportation is stepped up, border wall, tougher security, that sort of thing, without providing legal alternatives for foreign workers in agriculture. What did these agricultural industry groups find out? What are they worried about?
Yeah, this is not a new topic. This has been going on for many years. There is a big effort at immigration overhaul that kind of came to a head in 2013 and basically fizzled out without anything happening. So there were a lot of studies and investigation into different strategies to deal with undocumented immigration, one of which being, you know, what they call the enforcement-only strategy, which is, you know, pretty much what the Trump administration's approach is, basically keep them out, you know, get the ones that are here out and keep them from returning. And others were a combination of enforcement and overhauling the H-2A system to allow more workers in. But that enforcement-only strategy, which is looks like where we're headed at the moment, would cause, you know, tremendous hardship. I mean, forget about the workers themselves for a minute, but the farm employers would suffer tremendous hardship in terms of labor shortages, crops rotting in the field, loss of income, and then, of course, that translates down the line to the grocery store and the, you know, the produce that we have available and what it costs. The cost increases would depend somewhat on the type of food product we're talking about. Actually, dairy was one of the ones that the costs were found to be most impacted by that scenario. Something like, I think, a 90% increase in retail milk prices was what the study found. Other types of food were less impacted, but all would go up to a certain extent. And, you know, in a way, it's like, well, most Americans could afford to pay 10% more on their grocery bill. You know, like, they wouldn't starve. And so one could argue, you know, that's a solution, is, you know, kind of rejigger the system to make food cost a little more and use that extra economic incentive to smooth out the labor system. However, on the flip side, a 10% increase in grocery bills for someone who is unemployed and reliant on SNAP benefits, for example, actually is a pretty big impact and actually can, you know, cause someone to miss a meal. So both of those have to be looked at.
We're talking to Brian Barth from Modern Farmer, looking at the role of undocumented workers in American farming and what a crackdown could mean for farms and for food prices.
And you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Undocumented workers are about a quarter of the American farm workforce, according to Pew Research. Are you worried about a labor shortage if more of those workers are deported? How should their labor be replaced, if so? And do we need more legal paths for foreign workers to work in agriculture? If you work in farming, what's your experience when it comes to undocumented workers? Call 800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're talking to Brian Barth from Modern Farmer magazine about undocumented workers in American agriculture and the potential impact of increased immigration enforcement.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What are your thoughts on immigration law as it exists, as it could exist, and the role these often undocumented workers play in American farming? If you are in agriculture yourself, would particularly like to hear from you. 800-642-1234 is the number to call, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. Brian, before we go to our callers, you wrote about Georgia. They kind of tried this. There was a crackdown. What happened to agriculture in the state of Georgia?
Well, there was a lot of reports of labor shortages, basically. You know, farmers trying to find local native-born workers and, you know, not having great success, crops rotting in the field, you know, people showing up and then maybe lasting a half a day or a couple days and then quitting. And that's been seen time and time again. There was a very extensive study in North Carolina several years ago where they sort of tracked the recruitment efforts, a state labor office basically, you know, recruiting farm workers during a time of very high unemployment during the Great Recession. And, you know, a tiny number of the hundreds of thousands of unemployed North Carolinians actually applied for farm jobs. Very few actually showed up, and virtually none of them finished the season that year. So, you know, it would be great if, you know, farmers could employ more native-born Americans. You know, that's one possibility, but it just doesn't seem to happen even where unemployment is very high.
Let's go to our callers now. Chris is on the line in Madison. Chris, hi.
Yeah, and I got to say that I grew up farming, and I used to ride my bike, you know, all over the country helping out the different farmers, you know, as a 12-year-old. And now as a father, I look for employment for my teenage and young teenage sons, and I can't find it because of the changes in the ag industry related to this topic. And I think that there's a number of systems in play here, but one of which is, number one, we need to be teaching our children the value of hard work. And yeah, there are too many people who just don't want to do hard work, even because they can fall back on unemployment or some other government benefit. We need to employ more younger workers so that they learn the value of an actual hard day's work, and then pay them as such. And when you go to the grocery store, you buck up and you pay $4.50, $5 for a gallon of milk, because you know what? It takes a lot of effort to produce milk.
Chris, thanks for the call. A lot there, Brian. We need to have a better attitude toward hard work, because this farm work is, I don't think anybody would argue, this is hard work. But also, He says be willing to pay more for the food, so we'd be willing to pay more for the workers. What do you think about that kind of sticker shock? $4.50, $5 for a gallon of milk, for example.
Well, like I said, I think most Americans can afford it as long as, you know, there are safety nets for those that can't. There are a lot of efforts underway to create fair food labels. So kind of like the organic label or a fair trade label, a fair food label would indicate that that food chain for whatever the product was had been audited by an external group to say, okay, you know, these workers are being paid fairly, living wages, they're, you know, they have good working conditions, they have an opportunity to communicate with their employers about their needs. Unfortunately, none of those labels have reached the status of fair trade or certified organic. And I think that's kind of the next frontier, is making that happen. And how that's going to happen, I'm not sure. I think it takes, you know, discussions like this in public to bring more awareness and, you know, for people to start looking for those labels, because they are out there, but they're not widely available and they're not widely known.
Chris, thanks for the call. We'll go next to Rick on the line in Baraboo. Rick, hi.
Hi. I was wondering what would happen if we actually enforced existing laws that say employers cannot hire illegals. Perhaps larger fines and or jail time might simply prevent the hiring of illegal workers, and it might also do a couple other things, such as putting more pressure on Congress to ease the transition for these workers so they could work for these farmers. Or the farmers could find out that, hey, fines are expensive, jail time isn't what I want, I'm going to start paying more money, and I can then get natural-born workers.
Rick, thanks for the call. So, Brian, let's start with that first point. A lot of the enforcement we hear about focuses on undocumented workers themselves. Rick's saying more enforcement on, in this case, the farmers, the people employing them. Is there any talk of that?
You know, that hasn't been at the top of the Trump agenda. I think that has been certainly part of the immigration discussion. You know, there are mechanisms in place. Enforcement is difficult, takes a lot of manpower. I don't think there's a ton of political will to do it, honestly, because people really recognize that certain industries truly depend on illegal labor. And so I think people recognize that the first step is probably to, you know, make it a little bit easier to hire people legally rather than crack down on people for illegal hiring. That's where it is at the moment. You know, people have talked about that for years. There are those laws on the books, but I think there's not a lot of political will to really crack down and enforce them. And instead, we're just talking about, you know, more sweeping out any illegal individuals that the ICE can find, and, you know, tightening security on the border is what's being talked about at the moment. But I do really hold out hope that this, you know, intense debate that's going on right now will really force the hand of Congress to reopen this immigration overhaul file that was closed several years ago in futility. And make it happen this time. It almost got there. There were reasonable solutions. The different groups, you know, came to compromises, but ultimately, you know, the votes were not there, and it was not passed.
Back to our callers as we talk to Brian Barth from Modern Farmer. We'll go to Lee on the line in Madison now. Lee, hi.
Hi. Yeah, as far as the guy calling in wanting to implement children into the farming industry, I grew up on the farm, and as a child did a lot of work on the farm. I suffer from a back injury due to pitching pig poop, actually, 13, 14 years old, 15 years old. Farming is very hard work, and it is no place for children to be in. you have PTO shafts, you got tractors. The accident rates on farms are astronomical, and then he wants to implement children. He's a fool.
Lee, thanks for the call. And Brian, I mean, the reality is for a lot of these migrant families, their families are working on it, and that includes children, right?
Sure. Yeah, the federal labor rules for agricultural labor are fundamentally different from all other types of labor. This started back in the 1930s. It had to do with, you know, the culture at the time where most of farm labor was done by the extended family. And so, you know, children were allowed to work. You didn't necessarily have to pay them. You know, that was kind of normal at that time. Now conditions are a little bit different, but a lot of those same laws are still on the books. I certainly agree, actually, with the previous caller, you know, suggesting not children, but let's say college-age mm-hmm. students on their summer break, you know, programs to get those folks working on farms, I think, is a great idea, you know, to introduce Americans to, you know, what it means to grow food. And there is quite a bit of that in the organic farming world, not so much in conventional farming, but organic farming internships are, you know, a huge thing among the college-age crowd, and it would be great to see that expand.
Brian, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thank you.
We've been talking to Brian Barth. His Modern Farmer article on undocumented farm workers is linked over on the Central Time Facebook page. And while you're there, you can share your thoughts on the topic and maybe your experiences working on the farm, maybe employing migrant workers, maybe as a migrant worker yourself. Again, find that article, share your thoughts on the Central Time Facebook page.